To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. I am a public school teacher. I am missing my co-host, Rachel. She's off, hopefully having a wonderful time, and we'll be back next month. We host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview teachers and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today on the phone is Tanya Kapner. Tanya, hi.
Hello.
It's great to have you here. How are you doing?
Thanks. I'm doing great, thank you.
So Tanya and I were both at the NEA's, or the National Education Association's, big national representative assembly of somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000 teachers, from what I understand. And at some point early on, candidates running for office were giving speeches, and that was when I heard Tanya's speech, and I just thought, you know, wow, I want to talk with this woman. So now I get to do that.
Yay, I'm happy to be on.
So tell us about your background and your experience in education.
Sure. Well, I'm a high school history teacher in Oakland, California, of many years, mm-hmm. and I was a substitute teacher before that. And I've been to about, I'd say, 20 of the National Education Association national conventions.
You're a veteran.
Including this one where I was running for executive committee with some other folks in the caucus I'm part of, which is the Equal Opportunity Now by Any Means Necessary Teachers Caucus.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great. I'm curious, I always like to ask teachers this, what inspired you to go into education?
Wanted to make a difference for young people, like anybody going into education and becoming a teacher does. I actually didn't know I wanted to be a teacher until I became a substitute teacher and really enjoyed working with young people and saw them grow and change over the years and decided to go back to education school for full-time teaching.
Mm-hmm.
I also really saw, as a substitute teacher in Oakland, you know, the differences between schools, between more and less privileged schools, both differences in levels of segregation versus integration in different schools and resources in different schools. And I saw both, you know, the importance of public education to so many young people and the great things going on, but also the problems and challenges, you know, that needed to be addressed. So it really inspired me to go become a teacher full time and also to be active in my union. I was active ever since the beginning, I think, in terms of that.
Yeah, okay. So you could see, that's one of the great things about substituting, is you can see the differences between schools and even school districts, depending on how much.
I mean, actually, now I'm remembering there is, I mean, I actually went on strike in 1996 with the teachers union in Oakland as a sub that supported it.
Yeah.
And actually, that really made me like want to be a teacher, because we actually won class size reduction for the whole state of California for kindergarten through third grade to 20 students instead of like 30, and for ninth grade English and algebra to 20 students instead of 30. And I just saw like, wow, this makes a difference when you stand up for public education. Like, I saw really like difficult conditions as a substitute teacher. And then I saw if we stood together, and when we did take a strike action like that, that we actually got money that they claimed wasn't there for the whole state. So actually, I think that my activity in the union is also what inspired me to become a teacher.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about that. What sort of involvement have you had with your local and or state union?
I'm on my local executive board, mm-hmm. and I have served on the California Teachers Association State Council. I've been part of the resolutions committee of the National Education Association, which makes our, you know, belief statements.
Yeah.
And I'm really proud of, you know, the history of civil rights that the union has stood up for and has supported in terms of our beliefs for the right, you know, equal quality education for every student.
Mm-hmm.
But I also see the need for, you know, a civil rights movement to make that more active and to fight, especially like now with Donald Trump, I mean, he has to go because he is attacking the very basic right to public education and the very basic right to have unions. People might have heard, you know, of this Janus decision trying to attack union representation. And we need a movement that fights for public education as a right for everyone so that we can have, you know, both union jobs and decent pay for the next generation. But also, most importantly, I mean, public education is an opportunity that we must stand on if this is going to be a democratic nation.
Absolutely.
So I've been involved for a long time, and, you know, I think that we've got to take on Trump and that the national teachers unions are in a really good position to do that and represent what I think most Americans want, which is, you know, progress for equality.
Now, you ran for office at the NEA Rep Assembly this year, and had you run for office before?
I have a number of I mean, basically, I basically think that, you know, I strongly support the union, but I think that we've got to have a fighting leadership that understands, you know, that the civil rights movement really, you know, made such important change for this country that we need to look to that model for our unions to be stronger and to defend public education, and that what we really need is, like, from the ground up action to really make the politicians listen to us, the people that are in the classroom working with the students and the unions, because we actually, you know what works for public education, and we actually are committed to our students' rights. So yeah, I've run a bunch of times, and I really think that we've got to have, like, more independent action to take on the privatization and the attacks on public education that we've been seeing, and the attacks on the unions, which really are attacks on our students' rights to get quality education.
Yes. Talk a little bit more about what it was like to run.
Well, you know, the National Education Association has, caucuses, states. Every state meets and talks about their issues and concerns and votes on new business items and priorities for that year. And, you know, it was a great honor to be able to go around and talk to people from all the different states and see what issues and struggles they're facing and what fights they're taking on. But, you know, provide a leadership perspective there that, you know, I mean, I've been part of, you know, the women's marches and the resistance movement to Trump. I've been part of, you know, the demonstrations at the airports against the Trump's Muslim ban. And mm-hmm. you know, I've seen, like, students at my high school walk out for school safety and also to support the teachers' issues. And so I feel pretty confident that when we fight, we can win. And I felt honored to be able to bring that perspective and talk with the people from all different states about that, but also to hear, like I was saying, about their struggles and to see, you know, this spring, people are probably aware all the teacher strikes that happened around, you know, like Kentucky
right.
and West Virginia and all that. So I got to meet teachers from those places as well that were part of those actions.
You gave a speech that I mentioned in opening to somewhere between 8 and 10,000 educators. I'm never sure exactly how many. What was the main point that you were really hoping to communicate through that speech?
Yeah, I mean, I think just that, well, I guess it's kind of three things I'd want people to think about in terms of what way forward for our unions and for the labor movement. We have to take on Donald Trump and call him by name when he's making these attacks and, you know, really demand that he be that he be removed from office, or that, you know, create enough of a strong movement that he actually have to resign, because he's putting people in charge of every department that are completely committed to attacking the rights, you know, to those things. So, you know, public education, DeVos is against public education, and Trump is attacking unions and attacking basic rights to funding for schools, and is just such a purveyor of racism and anti-immigrant hysteria. To me, immigrant rights is a key question over mm-hmm. this next time period. And we fought very hard at the National Convention, and I'm glad that the teachers came out, you know, against the child separation policies, to say that this is supposed to be a country with opportunity, and that public education is about that. And that if we want, you know, to really maintain that in the next time period, we've got to have a fighting union leadership prepared to take strike actions, prepared to stand up for immigrant rights and what this country is supposed to be, a haven for folks coming for asylum. And that means taking on Donald Trump and, you know, calling it like it is, that he is the bully in chief, and that we've got to stand up to bullies if we want a decent future.
Yes. I'm curious, when you were when you were listening to some of the other speeches from some of the other candidates that you were running against, if you were to distinguish yourself or your speech from the other candidates, how would you go about making that distinction?
I think that most people in the teachers unions kind of have a sense, and I would say a growing sense, that the things I was speaking about are true in terms of like how important it is to stand up for, you know, immigrant rights and to stop the child separation policy. They know that Trump is leading these attacks. They do feel inspired by the teacher spring and the different strikes around the red states, the largest Republican states. But I think there's just, we've got to speak the truth and act on it, you know? And I feel like on the one hand, you have, you know, just too much folks wishing we could just have the status quo and just have elections be a popularity contest or just have a kind of look to, you know, get whatever Democratic politician elected, but that's just not going to work in this time period. We've got to look to ourselves and be our own heroes. And I feel like, you know, I was kind of just trying to speak to that and also urge the union to act on that. You know, we've got great beliefs. Let's act on them. And also let's not be, you know, afraid of taking on Donald Trump, because if we're going to win anything, we have to. So I think that, you know, there was a range of other candidates and speeches, but I think that's what distinguishes, you know, myself and the other folks that I ran with in the Equal Opportunity Now Caucus, which was Mark Ehrgood and A.D. Hoag, that we are saying this has to be a civil rights union in action, and that means taking on Trump, and that means, like, speaking truth to power and not relying on the politicians or following after the politicians, but really not giving them blank checks, like making them answer to us and to the clear demands that we want and need for public education. So I think that that's the distinction, is kind of being prepared to speak truth to power and act on it, that we're trying to motivate more and more folks in the union to stand up and do that.
I was going to say amen, sister, on that one.
Thank you.
I was listening, you know, and, you know, I was listening to your speech. I think I was able to re-listen to it. I think what struck me was it was delivered forcefully, which is important. There was a lot of passion, but that's, you know, that's pretty typical of a lot of speeches. But I think part of what distinguished it was that, like you said, just that call to action and some specific action. And you weren't afraid to name Trump. One of the things that was interesting was some of the discussion on the floor about whether or not we should even say the name Trump in some of the proposals that were being given. And I didn't sense that that you were timid about using the name Trump. Also, one of the things I'm struck by, and not necessarily just in some of the other speeches that I heard, but just overall, there were a number of times where I heard that, hey, you got to vote, right? As if voting was this big thing, and if we just, you know, all get out the vote, then that's going to solve the problems, right? I mean, maybe if we just vote in a Democrat, then that will just solve everything. And I think I felt from listening to your speech that you were saying that, no, I mean, yes, we do need to vote and we need to get Trump out of there, but we need to take action regardless of who is in office.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you look at how he's, you know, trying to rush through a Supreme Court appointee, really twisting Kennedy's arm to retire, you know, from the Supreme Court, and really trying to get folks in there to consolidate kind of his ability to have unfettered presidential power. I mean, really, he wants to be able to try to shut down that Mueller investigation. He wants to be able to, you know, to declare whatever kind of racial profiling and religious discrimination against immigrants or folks that are Muslim, and just basically try to get the Supreme Court to ratify it. And it's like, we can't wait, you know, a year or 2 years to take this on. We got to be doing it now. But also, even like, you know, if folks do want to win in the next round of election, well, then people should be, you know, like respecting Maxine Waters actually saying that Trump is a problem, not trying to shut that down, because the students know.
But wait a minute, wasn't that people. That was uncivil, wasn't it?
You know, I guess that actually kind of what I am saying is we've got to be less afraid of confrontation.
Yes.
Because we can't be more afraid of confrontation to win justice, you know, than we are of losing. I mean, it's to me, it's, you know, it's, people should just read Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from a Birmingham jail and just remember, like, he was always saying, you know, to have a civil rights movement, that justice is not the absence of tension. It's the presence of justice. You know, you can't, sometimes you have to shake things up to actually make a positive change. And I guess that's what, you know, Eon Bam has been trying to do in the teachers union, but also I think a lot of local activists are really wanting to unite around the country around, which is, yeah, like you said, a new movement kind of to regardless of the politicians or what they're doing, to take up the key issues and kind of push forward, you know?
Patience isn't always a virtue.
Exactly. I have been accused of being too impatient, but you know what? I think if we are too patient in this time period, we're going to see every basic human right and civil right, you know, and voting right and all of that stripped away. I mean, Trump will get away with as much as he can, you know, and he can't, we have to make sure he doesn't get away with this.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. I'm speaking with Tanya Kapner. Tanya, talk a little bit more about the Eon Bam Caucus. Now, I'd heard of BAM, Beyond Any Means Necessary. Beyond, is that right?
Well, our full name, actually, it's the Coalition to Defend Affirmative Action, Integration, Immigrant Rights, and Fight for Equality by Any Means Necessary, BAM. And we were formed in the late 90s, actually, to increase Black and Latino enrollment on the college campuses around the country and to fight for affirmative action. And we've been involved in a series of things, you know, education, court cases, mass demonstrations. And so Equal Opportunity Now, BAM caucus is a teacher's caucus in both, you know, American Federation of Teachers and National Education Association. And we also work with youth and college and high school students and so on to try to build a civil rights movement and a support for the union movement.
Gotcha. Okay. I know I came and looked for you at some point and I couldn't find the caucus. Next year, let's get some bigger signs up or something.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about some of the proposals that were discussed and debated on the floor this year. Pick one that stood out to you.
Well, I'm going to talk about I'm very glad that the National Education Association did discuss and debate and did pass a very good motion against the policy of child separation and the children being held in prison camps, and against, you know, basically saying this is a racist policy to be separating children from their parents because they're from Mexico or Central America, to be holding children in prison camps. I mean, this is just unacceptable. I'm glad that passed. I think there should have gone a bit farther, but, you know, we've got to stand up for immigrant rights now if we want this country to actually have any, I mean, the question of the right to asylum and citizenship rights, I mean, there's millions of people who have come here for a better life who are risking death if they're sent back to other countries. People may have seen, you know, the situation of, I believe it's an Eritrean man that was sent to deportation and committed suicide in the Cairo airport a few weeks ago. People are facing death if they're sent back to countries with a lot of violence and destitution, and people are trying to get citizenship rights, but, you know, the backlog is like 20, 30 years when people are trying, and thousands and thousands of dollars. And we've got to stand up for every person's right to come have a new life, whatever side of a mountain or river they're born on. Like, we've got to understand this is supposed to be a nation of opportunity and that immigrants are benefiting this nation. I mean, I think that, you know, people just need to speak up against demonizing and kind of dividing and conquering, you know, getting us all scrambling for crumbs, when actually, you know, there's a lot of wealth and opportunity if we stand together for that kind of progressive future.
Absolutely.
So I was happy that there was discussion on that and some votes on that at the conference. That was one thing that I think is important, you know, that we understand around the world that questions of immigration rights and refugee rights are really crucial. And particularly in this country, you know, Donald Trump has been trying to mobilize far right-wing forces and even some fascist forces to physically attack and assault, you know, the immigrant community. And we've got to say no to that and welcome our brothers and sisters and try to, you know, fight for citizenship rights. So I was glad that passed and was discussed.
Yeah. And don't you think it's ironic that it's some of our own drug policies and economic policies, what have you, that actually lead to the violence in these countries that force these folks to try to seek refuge here in the country that is responsible for much of what of the violence that's going on in their country.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are many, you know, young people who have come for survival, even unaccompanied teenagers and stuff, you know, have made their way here who are trying to, like get a high school education or are in our middle schools, and they've risked everything, and they face sure death if they're sent back. And, you know, we should be helping and assisting, you know, young people and folks looking for a new life, not to be sent to their deaths. I mean, that's what this country's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's just unacceptable for you know, for the Statue of Liberty says, you know, like, we welcome people yearning to breathe free, and this should be a country of actual freedom. Mm-hmm.
If you can think back to some of the other proposals that came, is there one that you wish that you could have changed the outcome?
I think you alluded to that there was still just like a real hesitancy to kind of, you know, say Trump's name as being in charge of a lot of the attacks that are going on. So we brought a number of new business items that were discussed that were just kind of, in the end, they were passed, but like modified to the point that you couldn't really tell what they were actually about, you know? So like, we brought one in support of the Me Too movement and against Trump's misogyny and his, you know, encouragement of sexual assault and stuff. And that didn't really get, like, that got modified to the point where people couldn't even tell what it was about. So that was a problem.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, there was stuff about like just supporting the role of youth and women in this resistance movement against Trump. And just there was a number of things that I think basically got kind of watered down to the point that if folks were just looking at them, they wouldn't really understand, like, actually people were coming into this conference, you know, wanting to speak up clearly for, you know, real major resistance to these just terribly misogynist and homophobic and racist policies, and wanting to, you know, make like sanctuary cities and schools actually real, you know, with our own action. And that's what I think, you know, when people do speak truth to power and do organize, like lots of us, you know, that's what we can do. I mean, if so.
You know, one of the things that I think is we need to be nuanced about is when we are naming Trump, because I think on the one hand, we absolutely need to name him and the policies that he's really pushing right now, he and his administration. On the other hand, we also need to be aware of our history, and that so much of the things, so many of the issues that we're facing today, that, you know, they've been here for since the beginning, the founding of this country, if not at least for the, you know, for the last few generations, right? When we're looking at just going back to our former President Obama, right? He was nicknamed the Deporter in Chief. There were kids that were separated from their families then too. So even though it's, you know, it's maybe on steroids now, these issues have all been around pre-Trump. So on the one hand, I feel like, yeah, let's name Trump. But that's also, on the other hand, let's also be aware that, you know, these are issues that are systemic, and that just voting him out will not make America great again.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, I would say that's true on the one hand. On the other hand, he is really trying to establish a kind of dictatorship as president that mm-hmm. I don't think we've seen before, to try to take these to the next step. So, I mean, like, you could say, like, in terms of public education, like where I'm from, California, it is really crazy because we've got a budget surplus of billions of dollars, and we've had Democrats in power there for a long time, yet they're still doing budget cuts and taking away a lot of the basic things for public education that people want and need, you know?
Yes.
And so on the one hand, like, we're looking to these teacher strikes and all the red states and being like, yeah, we should do that too, wherever we are, whoever's in charge, you know? But at the same time, like, the very basic right to even have any kind of union, or to not be like physically attacked if you speak your mind in public, you know, is Trump mm-hmm. is really trying to kind of create the type of dictatorship where he could kind of get to like a police power, police state type of situation. You know, we gotta definitely that's something that I think is different, you know, the way that he's kind of mobilizing like violence in the streets, you know, to kind of implement mm-hmm. his racist attacks. We saw that in Berkeley this last year, with folks coming from all over the country, the Trump supporters, to like strapped with knives and physically trying to assault, you know, members of the community there that are just in Martin Luther King Jr. Park, like across from a high school.
Yes.
But thankfully, we were able to get lots of people out and speak up against that city and say, no, like, we're not welcoming this violence. Like, this, we are going to protect immigrant families, you know, and stuff like that. And so, yeah, it is a very serious, and it's something, there's attacks going on around the country, kind of whoever's in charge state by state. But we gotta have a new movement to stand up. And I think we have to name Trump because he is trying to kind of consolidate and take it to a different level that I don't think we've seen in this country before, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Any thoughts? There were a couple of proposals about school resource officers or partnering with police unions. Any quick thoughts on those two? Those were a couple that I was not happy with the way that, with the outcome of either of those.
Yeah. I mean, I think we just have to have a clear movement against racial profiling and against, you know, police attacks and murders of Black and Latino youth and of people in the community, because we don't need police in our schools. You know, we need, like,
thank you,
resources and counselors. You know, every
yes,
police union supported Trump because they hope for the right to get away with that type of thing. At the same time, we see the movement in response to the police murders, and we see, you know, on the one hand, growing racism and all the examples of just police being called for people trying to use a pool or barbecue, trying to take us back to the Jim Crow days. On the other hand, we see, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement and people speaking up against police murders. And our students are safer in the schools if we have a movement against police and in the schools, and if we fight for counselors and that kind of resources and, you know, things that help create a situation where there's a stable and safe school, where there's programs for young people to be engaged with, music and art. You know, that is what makes a school place that students want to be, you know, not
yes,
metal detectors and police.
No. We are almost out of time. Tell us just real quickly about any plans you have over the next year or what you hope to accomplish.
Well, you know, I will be continuing to organize, like, locally, statewide and nationwide with other folks in the Equal Opportunity Now BAM caucus, and, you know, calling folks to also take up struggles, you know, against the anti-union Janus decision. You know, we did vote at the NEA for a real campaign and support of labor action in response to that we, the union is as strong as the members of the union make it. So for anybody that's in a union or in a job that's organizing for a union, it's more important now than ever that we speak up and organize a strong labor movement, but also that we you know, we guard against the divide and conquer and the anti-immigrant attacks, and that we do everything we can. I mean, it would just be great if there were mobilizations to, you know, border. You know, we'd like to see, and we're trying to organize and fundraise for folks to go, you know, to try to stop these child detention centers and really get the children reunited with their families. So I would just say to folks, it's been a pleasure being on the show, and I just call on folks to build the movement. And, you know, we do have a website, BAM.com, and people can, you know, look up our history and get involved. That would be great.
Thank you so much, Tanya, for joining us on KBOO. I also want to thank our engineer, Mike. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. This is Stephen Siegel. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 o'clock to catch another Labor Radio show.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Adroit Maneuvers, a new play by Michael Burdish, produced by Lighthouse Arts. The play will run from July 6th through July 22nd at the Imago Theater in Portland. The play is set in New York City in 1996. The story revolves around an elderly grandmother and her adult grandson as they talk about living through the Nazi invasion in World War II. This timely and thoughtful